GX on Agriculture with Rod McDonald.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome. It is the Friday edition of GX on Agriculture. Coming up on the program today, while we see that snow getting too close for comfort, slowly making its way closer and closer to Yorkton. It started off earlier this morning. We heard from some listeners, maybe an hour west and north of Yorkton, that they're starting to see the odd flurry, and it's gotten closer and closer. And I saw Nick Cashmar posting a little earlier that around Theodore now we've got some flurries that are making their way to the ground. And of course, it's not staying at this point, or we hope it's not anyway, but too close for comfort, as we say, and we'll find out what we can expect as far as rain and snow and when we might get back into some decent harvest weather when we chat here shortly with Phil Spivak, though. But coming up on the program today, over and above Phil Spivak, we'll talk about grain drying. That's certainly a hot topic these days, excuse the pun, and grain storage is a big issue for producers. We'll speak with Joy Agnew, a project manager at the Prairie Agricultural Machinery Institute in Humboldt, about some of the research they're doing regarding storing wet grain. And we alluded to it yesterday on the program that we'd have grain analyst Cliff Jamieson from DTN, the Progressive Farmer, and Neil Townsend from FarmLink Marketing Solutions, and get their perspective on the StatsCan Principal Field Crop Estimates Report that came out earlier this week. And we failed to get to that yesterday, and we'll certainly hear from both of them on the program today. First, the Agriculture Weather Outlook is a presentation of Yorkton Raymore and Watrous, New Holland, and Sean Prihika, your REMAX Blue Chip Ag Division Specialist.
Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather.
And it's time now for Precision Weather with meteorologist Phil Spivak. Although we do have the clouds again today, Phil, we're not seeing any precipitation from that, although we have received reports of some flurries starting to fall in areas just an hour or so west and north of here.
Yeah, and watching that on radar, it's nothing overly heavy, but it is sliding eastward, and we are likely to get into a little bit of that. Now, we're into that time of year when we start to sort of struggle with the exact temperatures, because the computer models tend to either over-adjust or under-adjust for the season. We start getting, we know it's cold, and all the computer equations are saying it's going to be a little bit colder, but still we get so far below average that it starts to have trouble correcting. All the computer models are saying we should be in the upper single numbers today, dew points in the mid-single numbers. The temperatures right now, looking at both temperature and dew point, are far below that. We do have the potential to warm a few more degrees. 8 is the upper end of things. Still thinking that's a possibility for many of us, but most of us are going to be stopping not too far from where we are, 5-6 degrees this afternoon, especially as that north to northeast wind kicks up, 10 to 20 kilometers per hour this afternoon, 20 to 35 tonight. It's going to feel quite chilly. Now, the temperatures are not moving much today, nor do they move much tonight, but they are cool enough that as that precipitation comes in, it could be a very wet snow, it could be rain. 5-6 degrees is enough to support rain, but 4 or 5 degrees is generally enough to support snow. So we're going to be right on the border for much of the day as that precipitation does come in. Spotty showers are possible through the afternoon for the Yorkton area. Again, as you were mentioning, there is some steadier rain and snow to the west, and that's sliding in. That comes in here for this evening, and then later on tonight it comes to an end. It's most likely rain, or again, a very wet snow. Better chance for it to change over to all snow before it comes to an end tonight. We drop off to around zero. The wind comes down a bit tomorrow, mostly cloudy sky. The precipitation is over with through the night, but a few more flurries and sprinkles flare up for the afternoon. Temperatures struggling to around 3. That tends to favor flurries, but just as 5 or 6 degrees can support rain, so can 3, so can 1. It's all a matter of the upper level, and there's just enough warm air sliding in from the south to give us that mixture. Flurries tomorrow night, back down right around the freezing mark, and for Sunday, cloudy sky, a few flurries or sprinkles will be around 5. Just a fast-moving system and pattern in terms of systems moving along. In and out they go. As they come in, we get these little quick bouts of precipitation. Monday, we're in between them, just a cloudy sky with a high of 8. Warmer air, though, comes in for Monday night and Tuesday. It's going to be some rain that slides in overnight and then ends early Tuesday. Some improvement through the day with a high Tuesday near 11.
All right, thank you, Phil. Now, this hour's temperature roundup. Saskatoon, Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington, 2 degrees. You can see why they're seeing snow already today. 4 in La Paw, 5 in Dauphin along with Hudson Bay, 6 degrees for Roblin and Swan River. Shoal Lake Russell, 7, 8 for Broadview, Mooseman and Regina. Brandon reports 9 degrees, Indian Head, 10. In the Yorkton-Melville region, it's cloudy. The wind is light, northeast at about 3. Relative humidity, 75%. Our current temperature holding steady over the past couple of hours here at 4 degrees. Yesterday's high and low, 10 and 0. Normals for this date, daytime highs near 15 with overnight lows near 3. Warmest place in the province yesterday was Kindersley, where it got up to 14 degrees, and the Saskatchewan cold spot was LaRonge at minus 6. In Manitoba, Island Lake, 13, the warmest place in the province, and the Manitoba cold spot was Thompson, minus 4 degrees. Sunrise this morning, 6:34. The sun will set tonight at 6:52. Again, our current temperature is 4 degrees. It's 12:23, 1:23 in Manitoba. You're listening to GX on Agriculture. We'll take a quick break, and we're right back on the program after this. It's coming up on 25 after 12, after 1 in Manitoba. AgriView is next at 12:30. Growers are working on grain drying and storage strategies while waiting for the weather to improve. The Prairie Agricultural Machinery Institute in Humboldt has released a 10-point checklist containing basic recommendations for improving results and reducing risk when storing wet grain. Joy Agnew is a PAMI project manager involved with ongoing research. She says they've been receiving plenty of calls and emails from producers.
They're wondering how to get their grain into a condition that can be stored relatively safely, but doing that with not ideal ambient conditions is possible, but it definitely requires management. The fundamental physics of heated air drying applies to all the crops. The main difference among the crops is obviously the target moisture content storage level that you want, and I guess a little bit of a difference among the different commodities with airflow rate and fan sizing and things like that, but that's sort of secondary to supplemental heating. The idea of adding heat to the air to increase its capacity to dry and how to manage that is the same for all crops.
Adding supplemental heat to natural air drying involves two basic steps: using heat to draw moisture out of the grain, and then using moderate airflow rates to move that moist air out of the bin.
Basically, you can take a drizzly, cold, nasty day like we had last week, you know, it's where 8 degrees Celsius or 10 degrees Celsius and 99 or 100% humidity, and you can turn that air into a beautiful drying day by adding some heat to the air. So the technical challenge is, how do you add that heat effectively so you're not, you know, wasting a bunch of fuel, and safely so that, you know, you're not producing a situation where you can have damage or combustion or explosion or anything like that, as well as keeping the grain safe and not overheating and, you know, other basic parameters inside the bin.
Agnew talks about some of the basic recommendations.
The key thing with using supplemental heat is that the hotter is not always the better. The main thing is that using supplemental heat with a natural air drying fan is not the same thing as heated air drying, where you just crank up the temperature as basically as hot as you want, and you know it'll dry really fast. Because you're limited with natural air drying systems, you're limited with the capacity of your fan or the CFMs coming out of your fan. So there's two fundamental things that are happening, I guess. The hot air is pulling the moisture out of the grain kernel into the voids in the grain, and it's the CFM of your fan that is pushing that moisture out. So really hot air will pull a lot of moisture out of the grain into the kernels or into the voids between the kernels, but if you don't have enough CFMs to actually get it out of the bin, then you just have hot, wet grain, and that's not good. So you do have to match your temperature increase with your fan capacity. So our recommendation, and we are currently doing research on this exact topic, so my recommendation right now is based on previous knowledge that hasn't been validated, about 0.75 CFM per bushel is minimum if you're dealing with plenum temperatures, like heated air temperatures of around 20 to 25 degrees Celsius. 0.75 CFM per bushel is minimum.
We asked Agnew if the information that they get from producers helps with their research.
Definitely, because they'll call me and tell me what happened or what worked or what didn't, and basically all the recommendations on that list that you're posting came from those conversations and some basic reading that I did. Probably the biggest benefit of those conversations and learnings, though, is that we were able to make a case to secure research funding to actually conduct this research and, you know, more confidently define the required airflow rates with temperature increases and things like that. So that research is literally starting today. We just loaded up the bins with tough wheat and hooked up our heating system. So stay tuned for those results, I guess.
Agnew elaborates about their research on supplemental heating and airflow rates.
So our research is being done in Humboldt because we're doing a controlled experiment, I guess, but we are also collecting whatever data we can from bin scale installations around the province. And when we proposed this research 2 years ago or whatever it was, you know, we said we'll see what we can get, because it really depends on the conditions in that fall. Like, we don't know how many bin scale natural air drying with supplemental heat systems will be going, but our phones have been ringing off the hook saying that they're running heaters, you know, come out and collect data, do whatever we can to help them figure out how to properly manage those systems. So we'll be able to get a lot of bin scale data as along with our scientific replicated data that we're collecting here in Humboldt.
Agnew says it's shaping up to be a repeat of 2016 in many northern and some central regions.
2 years ago happened, and I was doing what I could to share best management practices with producers. It was thought to be, you know, a 1 in 10 year kind of year. Like, oh, we're not going to have a bad year like this for another 5 or 10 years. And 2 years later, here we are in almost the exact same situation. And I guess I do want to add that the list of best management practices that went on the release is just the start. We are compiling a much more comprehensive, frequently asked question sheet related to supplemental heating, and that'll be ready probably early next week and available on PAMI's website.
Joy Agnew is a project manager at the Prairie Agricultural Machinery Institute in Humboldt. It's 12:30 now, 1:30 in Manitoba. Time for AgriView. It's a presentation today of People's Machine and Welding in Yorkton.
GX94, AgriView.
Harvest across the GX listening area has been stalled for the past week or two. Despite that, we're still ahead of the game when you consider the five-year average for harvest progress. It's a much worse situation in Alberta, according to Cliff Jamieson, Canadian grains analyst for DTN, the Progressive Farmer.
Unlike Saskatchewan, Alberta has been running behind average. Average pace as of last week, we were about 28% complete behind the five-year average of 34%, and there's been a lot of wheels stopped over the last week, and of course we've seen snow in the northern part of the province, so definitely we're going to need some help, and the 7-day forecast doesn't look that awful supportive right at the moment.
Saskatchewan Agriculture reports harvest is 62% complete, and Manitoba Agriculture has harvest progress pegged at 65% complete. India is pressing China to drop its ban on rapeseed meal imports from the South Asian nation. China was the biggest buyer of Indian rapeseed meal, a key ingredient in animal feed, until Beijing banned the purchases in late 2011 after tests showed some cargoes were contaminated with a dye widely used in India to brand grain sacks. In light of the escalating trade war between China and the U.S., China has been seeking alternative sources of animal feed to replace soybeans, which were the United States' biggest agricultural export to China last year, worth almost $13 billion. The Manitoba government announcing two new trusts for Manitoba's agri-insurance and hail insurance programs. Manitoba Agriculture Minister Ralph Eichler says establishing these trusts clearly demonstrates that the funds are strictly for the benefit of insured producers, and it provides greater transparency to the public that the funds cannot be used by government for any other purposes. As the trustee, Manitoba Agriculture Service Corporation will remain in control of the funds and ensure that they're solely for the benefit of participating agricultural producers. Shares of the venture capital arm of the marijuana company Canopy Growth went on a roller coaster ride on their first day on trading on the TSX Venture Exchange. Canopy Rivers, a subsidiary that pursues investment opportunities in the marijuana sector, closed at $8.75 a share, down more than 18% from its opening price of $10.75. However, that price marked a nearly 150% increase from the stock's previous close. Canopy Rivers began trading yesterday amid a cannabis stock frenzy as Canada prepares to legalize the drug for recreational use October 17th. Its investment portfolio includes licensed producer AgriFarm and Solo Growth, a retail cannabis distributor. The Alberta government is telling Ottawa it doesn't support a federal proposal to ban the use of liquid strychnine for killing prairie gophers. Health Canada is proposing to ban the use of strychnine to control the rodents, formerly known as the Richardson ground squirrel. There's concern that strychnine kills other animals, including species at risk, such as the swift fox and burrowing owl. Alberta Agriculture says producers are worried about the financial implications of a ban because strychnine is the only effective tool for controlling gophers. Other groups, including the Canadian Cattlemen's Association and the Saskatchewan Association of Rural Municipalities, have voiced similar concerns. From October 1st to 5th, Clean Farms is running a special one-day collection event at 20 designated agriculture retail locations throughout the central and northern parts of Saskatchewan. Old or unwanted agricultural pesticides and equine and livestock medications will be accepted at no charge and disposed of safely and responsibly. In the GX listening area, collection sites will be run October 1st in Foam Lake, October 2nd in Hudson Bay, and in Yorkton, at Yorkton Distributors, also October 2nd, October 3rd in Norquay, and October 5th in Watrous. Each special collection event runs from 9 till 4. The program is funded by the crop protection industry and the Canadian Animal Health Institute, and operated by Clean Farms, a nonprofit environmental stewardship organization. Last year, Clean Farms collected 181,804 kilos of unwanted pesticides and over 2,800 kilos of livestock and equine medications in southern Saskatchewan. The collection program is conducted every 2 years and rotates between northern and southern communities. And one more thing, the Manitoba government says it's supporting expansions to pork facilities owned by High Life Foods with tax increment financing. The province estimates its tax financing to be worth an estimated $9.5 million over the next 22 years. The province calls it a financing tool to encourage economic growth and development through incremental taxes created by significant new development. High Life celebrated the grand opening of its new feed mill in Killarney in July and has also expanded its hog processing plant in Neepawa. Manitoba Agriculture Minister Ralph Eichler congratulated High Life on the accomplishments and says the food processing sector is key to Manitoba's economic success.
The food processing industry is a major economic driver, which accounted for, in 2017, 25% of all manufacturing activities here in Manitoba, and generated $4.7 billion in sales. Of that amount, 42%, or $2 billion, was from the meat processing sector. This is very exciting for Manitoba's protein industry. In the last 2 years, there have been over $1.1 billion in new investments in agriculture and processing industry here in Manitoba. In Manitoba, this is creating an economic activity for new jobs here in Manitoba and communities, as well as creating markets for grown foods and crops. High Life's investment of $176 million will result in 165 new jobs at the company's processing facility, hog barns, and feed mills. It's equally exciting to see Manitoba's success story grow and thrive.
It's Manitoba Agriculture Minister Ralph Eichler. It's 12:38 now, 1:38 in Manitoba. That is Ag Review, and we have the Livestock Market Report coming up next.
Livestock Market Conditions.
Cattle futures were up at the close today. October live cattle, 113.07, up 62 cents. December live cattle, 118.45, up 55 cents. October feeder cattle, 158.07, up 80 cents. November feeder cattle, 157.80, up 65 cents. Lean hog futures closed down today. October, 60.30, down 95 cents. And December lean hogs, 57.40, down 87 cents. And those are today's closing U.S. livestock futures. We'll check the closing grain prices coming up in about 8 minutes from now at 10 to 1, 10 to 2 in Manitoba. Welcome back. We'll get two different perspectives today on this week's StatsCan Principal Field Crop Estimates Report. The report was based on a model that incorporates coarse resolution satellite data from StatsCan's Crop Condition Assessment Program, Statistics Canada's Field Crop Reporting Series, and agroclimatic data. Cliff Jameson is Canadian Grains Analyst with DTN, the Progressive Farmer.
Definitely the model found a larger crop than the earlier July estimates. The report has been done, the September estimates have been done since 2014. And over those last 3 years, we've seen the model, on average, come up with a higher estimate for almost all crops. So we almost expect it. And in fact, if we look at last year, was a similar year where the southern prairies faced dry conditions, the northern prairies faced better, more favorable conditions. We've seen the model come up with higher estimates, and then the final December estimates even higher yet. There definitely seems to be a trend where the model seems to come up with higher estimates for whatever reason. I guess we won't know until some December estimates in terms of whether the model or the July estimates came closer to the final.
Jameson says of the 17 crops reported by Statistics Canada, the production estimates were increased for 12 crops, resulting in an overall production increase of over 7.6 million metric tons. Jameson says the recent Agriculture and Agri-Foods Canada report on supply and demand has left him and other analysts scratching their head.
And they base that on the most recent Statistics Canada estimates. And of course, this week's numbers included the July estimates as well as the July 31st ending stocks report that was released in early September. So in that particular report, I canola is a great example. They knocked off a million tons from the ending stocks of canola for the current crop year down to 1.250 million metric tons. The next day, they released revised production estimates that tacked on 1.8 million tons on the production side. So I dare say we are sending mixed signals to the trade and to the world, and it's all in timing.
Cliff Jameson is Canadian Grains Analyst with DTN, the Progressive Farmer. I also spoke with Neil Townsend, Senior Market Analyst with FarmLink Marketing Solutions, about this week's Crop Estimates Report.
I think it's a time of year where we're going to get more accuracy as to where the crops really are. And I do think the model-based thing has a better reference point than the survey-based one that came out, at the end of last month or early this month.
Townsend says this week's crop estimates are probably more accurate than the farmer survey conducted back in July.
Yeah, I mean, I would say this about the farmer survey. I mean, it's well-intentioned. I think it's perhaps a little outdated in the sense that, a 3 or 4 week gap between doing the survey and releasing the results doesn't really give you a good picture. I think it's done at a very emotional time. I think canola, for example, I think that's the farmer's cash crop. I mean, people really, they really care about canola. And I think when you ask them, like, what are the canola prospects kind of in July and it's been hot and dry, you get an answer that kind of, captures some of that emotion, right? Like that, it's hot and dry. I'm really worried about my canola crop. I don't know what it's going to do. And I just think that, those numbers, you can't really pay too much attention to them.
I asked Townsend what his key takeaways would be from this week's crop estimates report.
Number one, it seems like there's a pattern in Western Canada. The pattern over the last 3 to 4 years has been that, you know, there appear to be some weather stresses on a crop across the prairies. But by the time we get to September, those weather stresses are not as readily apparent in the collective. Maybe specifically some farmers have some problems, but the collective of the entirety of the prairies, the crop seems to do pretty good, regardless, really, of the absolute weather conditions. So, you know, there's something genetically that's been improved. Drought tolerance, weather tolerance, rain tolerance, all these kinds of things are better. And these crops want to grow nowadays. And we're at the precipice again of, you know, completing harvest here in the next 3 to 4 weeks. And we're going to have a relatively large crop. You know, supplies that we thought might be a little tighter are going to be a little bit more expansive.
There wasn't a big market reaction to this week's crop estimates report. November canola futures closed up about 60 cents the following day. And we're up another couple of dollars yesterday. Townsend says there's lots of pressure on the entire grains and oilseeds complex.
Like the trade tensions, number one, and just like, you know, abundancy is the other reason. And the abundancy, again, it's centered around the United States and the very favorable prospects for their corn and soybeans. And those are weighing extremely heavy on the futures that are based in the United States. And I think canola, I mean, you know, I think there's been a gradual realization that the ending stock situation is not going to be as tight as we maybe thought it would be in the 2018-19 marketing year. And then the other thing, I don't know if this is really a driver of the futures, but I would say that, you know, everybody's kind of projecting more exports to China in 2018-19, like a record level, maybe approaching 5 million tons. But there's scant evidence of that. I mean, not to say that it's not going to happen, but it's just that we don't have things that are going to confirm our bias right now. Like the canola exports for the first few weeks of the marketing year are pretty much on par with where they were last year. So we haven't seen any, you know, bounce in those numbers. So, you know, we're waiting to see some confirmation that, yes, China's going to take more. And in the meantime, what's happened is we've just realized that the crop is getting bigger and bigger. So we thought maybe it would be under 20 million. And now, in all likelihood, it's going to exceed 21 million.
And finally, Townsend talks about harvest progress across the prairies.
The weather has not been cooperative. We got off to a relatively good start. Manitoba's probably in the best shape. Southern Saskatchewan's okay. You know, south of Highway 1 in Alberta's probably relatively good, too. But, you know, it's been raining and crops need to dry out. And moreover, it's been, you know, relatively cool. So I don't think there's going to be much progress this week. Next week, the weather's better. But then in October, it looks to be... you know, and these are forecasts, who knows, but the forecast is for a little bit more rain and potentially cooler temperatures. So, you know, one of the byproducts of that, the most significant factor right now is that what looked to be like a very exemplary quality crop has once again, you know, there's going to be some quality degradation, which is not, you know, it's not good news, but it's not necessarily the worst news because it gives us a little like piles of different types of stuff that we can market. And there is lots of demand for, you know, wheat of all classes. It's not just all number one CWS. And you know, same would go for, you know, we want some feed barley, we want some malt barley and those kinds of things.
Neil Townsend is Senior Market Analyst with FarmLink Marketing Solutions. It's coming up on 10 to 1 now, 10 to 2 in Manitoba. And we have the closing grain prices next.
Commodities update.
Canola futures will close out the week on a positive note. November canola closed up today at $489.70, up 60 cents. January canola $496.50, up $1.80. December Minneapolis wheat $582.50 a bushel, down 6 cents. December Kansas City wheat $525.25, down 1.75. December Chicago wheat, 521.75, down 2.25 cents. December corn was up today, closing at 357.25, up 4.75 cents. November soybeans, 847.25, down 3 cents. And December oats closed at 253 a bushel, up 4 cents. And those are today's closing grain prices. And finally on the program today, a new program aims to fill the gap being left by retiring veterinarians in large or mixed animal practices in Saskatchewan. Over the past decade, 14 rural veterinary practices have closed as older vets retire. The trend is creating service gaps where the closest veterinarian can be a two-hour drive away. The Saskatchewan Veterinary Medical Association hopes to fill some of those gaps in the future with its preceptorship program. Lorraine Sarienko is the association's administrative coordinator.
We see the veterinarians in rural Saskatchewan are staying a really long time, and they're either attempting to hire or find somebody to either work with them or eventually take over the practice, but there hasn't been the interest. And we're hoping by having this program and kind of sparking an interest and giving some opportunities for these students to go out to practices that are a little bit off the grid.
Five third-year students from the Western College of Veterinary Medicine spent 14 weeks this past summer in large animal practices around the province, including in Melville.
The first couple of weeks generally is get acquainted with the clinic, see how everything goes, follow some appointments around, but as they get through, they're expected to do more and more and be able to have the veterinarian that's supervising them really become just a supervisor and a mentor and have the student do everything under supervision and be able to kind of be the vet while having the mentorship and guidance through the appointments.
The preceptorship program gives students an opportunity to learn on the job, according to Jasmine Paulson.
On any given day, I could go from a small animal appointment to seeing a bull in clinic or a horse between appointments, so it was pretty diverse every day. I loved it. I've always really enjoyed working with cattle, and I know that that's what I want to do when I'm a practicing veterinarian as well, so it was really good to get the experience and see how other veterinarians do things, because everyone has their own little tips and tricks for how they do stuff.
The vet students also gained more experience interacting with clients.
As a veterinarian, you're obviously working with animals, but you're kind of forming a team with your clients to solve problems and help their animals produce better or help their sick animals feel better. So I definitely learned a lot more about working with the client and how that's such a beneficial relationship to have.
Sarienko says there are other adjustments for students that don't have an on-farm rural background.
Definitely in large animal and mixed animal or rural practice in general, it is definitely a different type of lifestyle because you are definitely not working your traditional hours all the time. You're ingrained in the community, so you might be in the grocery store and being asked questions about an animal, and you're kind of always having to be on. So it's a little bit harder for a work-life balance in rural Saskatchewan, but the people who do it absolutely love it, and it is part of who they are.
Each student received $10,000 for their summer's work. Funding for the preceptorship program comes from the Saskatchewan Veterinary Medical Association, the Saskatchewan Cattlemen's Association, and the participating veterinary practice. On Monday's program, we'll hear from a cattle producer who's a supporter of the preceptorship program. We're running out of time on the program today, though. It's 12:58 now, 1:58 in Manitoba. We just have time for precision weather before we exit. And it's a presentation today of Sharps Crop Service. GX94's precision weather forecast for the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, and Russell regions. Continuing cloudy this afternoon, 70% chance of spotty showers, wind north-northeast 10 to 20, high 8. 80% chance of rain or snow showers tonight, northeast wind 20 to 35, overnight low near zero. Cloudy again tomorrow. 40% chance of afternoon rain or even snow showers. Wind east-northeast 15 to 25. High tomorrow, only 3. Cloudy again Sunday. 50% chance of isolated rain or snow showers. Wind east-southeast 15 to 30. High 5. Mainly cloudy on Monday. High 8. Then Tuesday, 30% chance of early showers before clearing. A little warmer on Tuesday. High near 11. On the temperature roundup this hour, 4 degrees in La Paw. Swan River reporting 6. Roplin also 6 degrees this hour. 5 in Dauphin and Hudson Bay. Brandon 9. Shoal Lake Russell 7. Regina, Broadview Mooseman 8. 2 degrees in Saskatoon. Wynyard, Wadena, and Kelvington also reporting 2 this hour. In the Yorkton-Melville region, it's cloudy. The wind is northeast at 3, relative humidity 75%, and our temperature 4 degrees. That's it for today. Join me again Monday afternoon for GX on Agriculture, 1215 here in Saskatchewan, 115 in Manitoba. I'm Rod MacDonald.